Welcome to episode 39 of All of Your Business. These are the vulnerable, authentic, and unfiltered stories of business owners whose currents raise tides that lift all of our businesses, communities, and dreams. On this episode, we're excited to welcome Carrie Sweet of Peace by Lease. And now your host, Michael Jonas.
Nice to see you, well, virtually, Carrie.
Yeah, it's good to see you too.
Yeah. So first I have to tell the audience that you're my friend, but you're also my business partner in the business that we're going to talk about today, or you're going to talk about, because I always talk, so I want you to talk.
Okay.
So first and foremost, tell us a little bit about Peace by Lease, and then, I'll dig deeper and we'll talk about your childhood.
Perfect. Yeah, so, pardon me, Peace by Lease is a new Oregon residential property management company. We were founded in April of this year, opened our doors in October. We have been certified as a B Corp. And, we started this as a passion of ours with believing that property management has historically not been done in a compassionate and humane way for both tenants and owners. So really, really trying to change things in the industry, find out ways to make things better within the realm of current laws, which can be a challenge.
Yeah. Most people don't like their property manager or have a negative comment to say. I guess comment about that, like, do you think that it's possible to live in a world where you know and trust your property manager and have good things to say about them?
First, I will say I am on that boat to some extent. I actually have the words like landlord and property manager muted on my social media because I get just overwhelmed with the number of negative comments and rightfully negative, not people just bashing their landlords, but saying, I just got, a 100% rent increase notice. And obviously in Oregon, our laws prevent that, but not everywhere. And they didn't always. And I do think, I've been a renter for all of my adult life. And I do think it's possible to have a good, compassionate property manager or landlord. I've rented from individuals that were caring and willing to work with a tenant if they were, having a hard time paying rent or, coming up with a security deposit. I've paid security deposits in multiple payments. So I know it's possible. It's just not the standard.
Yeah. And the property management's an interesting field because you have to please the owner who is contracted with the property manager. But then there's also the tenant. So essentially you have two clients who are on competing interests or have, so I guess talk to me a little bit about that. Our goal is to work with owners who care about tenants. So how may that be a little bit different from other models or the past examples of property management?
Sure. So, yes, as a property manager, it is a kind of a weird position to be in because actually by law, a licensed property manager has to work equally for the benefit of both parties, both the owner of the property and the tenant. And I don't think there are a lot of jobs in this world where like a salesperson or a customer service person is really equally looking out for all parties in the equation. But as far as working with owners goes, it is a little bit different. We have a screening process that we created to make access more equitable for all tenants. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about that in detail, but getting property owners to buy into that. And there's multiple pieces to that where that opens up a broader pool of tenants. So it can sometimes lead to faster rentals. We don't have maybe as long of vacancies because we have a broader pool of applicants coming to us. But it can also mean you know, on the flip side of that, it can also mean moving through several applicants before we get a quality one or one that meets those screening requirements. So really, I think talking to owners, it's, you know, owners understand, they, especially ones that have managed their property themselves, they're seeing all different sorts of applicants and maybe struggling to try to figure out which ones are the right ones to be putting into their property. And so communicating with them that this is our screening procedure, and while it might let in somebody that wouldn't traditionally get approved in a different property management company, you know, we are still reviewing their information and vetting them as a quality tenant as much as we possibly can. Also connecting, you know, with our local communities, so hiring local vendors. So owners that are concerned with using more family-owned, minority-owned, local businesses, they are getting that when they're utilizing Piece by Lease for property management.
And you mentioned there's a broader pool of applicants. I know that the historic way to do it is with a credit report or a credit score and, you know, looking at potential crimes or employment history or things like that. Can you kind of talk about how we've decided to look at people more holistically, and then also how that plays into the application process?
Yeah, absolutely. So historically, in most property management companies, they have a very strict screening criteria. And that's going to typically be, you know, a credit score of, let's say, 650 or above, income of three times the monthly rent. Some of that has changed in Oregon in the last several years, and in the city of Portland specifically, there have been movements to reduce some of that criteria to make it more accessible to more people. But as a rule, most property management companies, especially the larger ones, they run your screening, your application information, they look at your credit score, your income, your criminal background, and they're just checking off boxes. Do you meet this requirement? Yes or no? If there's a no, done. You're denied. It's over with. We don't have a conversation about it, and that's it. We've chosen to create a different screening criteria. We still look at credit scores. We still look at income. We still look at criminal background, but we also accept letters of recommendation. We also offer tenant education and different things to help people in our system. So we created a scoring system. Essentially, you have to earn a certain number of points. Each category, the credit score, the income, et cetera, is a sliding scale. If you have a criminal background, for instance, you can potentially earn those points back directly by getting a letter from your probation officer or a program that you've completed, an educator that you've worked closely with, anything like that. You can explain the situation. You know, I personally have friends and family that have been kept out of the rental markets because of old criminal histories. You know, I have a family member that had a felony for selling marijuana. It wouldn't even be a criminal conviction these days. So, you know, why are we keeping that person out of the rental market when, you know, they have been a successful member of society for a long time? By the time, you know, they were married and working a full-time corporate job, making great money, why are they being kept out of a rental? So those are the people that we're giving more opportunities to. And by putting all of that information in their hands up front before they ever apply, they're able to give us a basically a full packet of information about themselves. And we're better able to make an equal decision based on that information.
Hmm. Well, and one of the things that I think is really important is communication and education. And I know that we've talked about that without education, tenants don't always know what rights they have. Owners don't always know what rights they have, but also the communication breakdown is real. So can you talk a little bit about that? Like the approach of having more dialogue, being more educated, how that relates to access and feeling comfortable in your home and feeling respected, like you're supposed to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've actually been in the property management industry for the last 4 years. So I worked for someone else prior to deciding to change the world with you. pardon me. And in that, you know, when I was doing screening for tenants, you learn a lot about a tenant in just that first phone call, or a prospective tenant in just that first phone call. And so I'd have people call and say, you know, like, oh, I was told at the last place they wouldn't accept Section 8. I have a Section 8 voucher. Well, that's illegal. Everyone has to accept Section 8. It's a legal form of income. It has to be allowed. You know, that law passed in the last several years, so it's kind of a newer situation, and a lot of tenants don't know it exists. So, you know, that's just one example. I just recently saw a GoFundMe for a family here in Portland, where they were trying to raise like three times a month rent. It was like first, last deposit and extra deposit. And in that, they said they have a emotional support animal, and it's specifically, you know, it's a service dog for an anxiety issue. And so I reached out and said, hey, I don't know if this helps, but you can't be charged a deposit on a service animal. Without that education, people are struggling, you know, they're struggling to get in because they're trying to raise that money that they're not legally allowed to be charged in the first place. There's certain evictions that can't be disclosed, especially with COVID. There's all sorts of things that tenants don't know. And a lot of times, you know, especially individual property owners are violating these laws without knowing as well. They're not maliciously trying to keep tenants out. They just aren't up to date. And that's where property managers specifically, we're required to keep up on the laws. Some do better than others, but you know, I have to take 30 hours of continuing education every 2 years to keep my license up. And I personally seek out information about, you know, diversity, systemic racism, fair housing law, environmental issues like mold in the house, things like that, so that I'm staying up to date on the newest and most current laws and information to be able to help tenants and owners both throughout these processes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the things that's historic is not only not providing access, but it's the whole eviction process of someone gets an eviction on the record and then they can't find another place, and it's just this continual cycle. So I know that you and I, we have a different view of evictions, where we don't go from problem to eviction. Can you discuss that, like why that's really important?
Yeah, it's funny. I just saw a blog article in the last couple of days, and I haven't shared it with you yet, but I will. It actually says, like, more or less, it's like the best way to get back at a bad tenant is to evict them because it stays on their record. And it's like, dude, who wants to keep people out of housing? Like, why? How is that your goal? And that's the reality. Once you have an eviction, for most of these property management companies, it's an automatic denial. So, you know, we try really hard to avoid eviction. And I actually kind of, I have a management degree and I come from a corporate management background. So I have a very kind of like HR based mindset of when somebody violates lease terms, maybe they don't know that they're violating lease terms. So the first step is to have a discussion with them and say, hey man, did you know that this is against the rules? And, you know, obviously record that, or, you know, document that conversation and send it to them so they can see it in writing as well, but make sure they understand what they're violating. And then, you know, the next step is, it's kind of like that HR steps where you get like a verbal warning and then a written warning and then a final warning. And so we're giving the opportunity to correct it. We're giving time, we're giving the education, we're pointing it out. We're not just going, bam, you violated a rule. The next step is we're going towards eviction.
We've talked about too with, you know, someone who's a really good tenant and they have either a medical expense or they lost their job or something comes up, and there's this idea of like, where's my rent? You know, but what if that's a really great person who had a life experience? And so by having that communication and that dialogue and that trust, we can actually have that person potentially pay that month's rent that they missed over the course of the next couple months. There's ways to talk about this. So instead of saying to that person, you're done, you can't live here anymore, we actually talk to them like a human being and figure out how to work through that issue. So can you kind of talk about that? Like, what's your thought on this sort of, I think that happens a lot of societies. We're so fearful of being kicked out because that's how people have treated, you know, especially underrepresented minorities of this is my space. You're only here for a moment and you're here to pay me. And so if the person who's living there knows that they can actually communicate with and trust the person who is helping them, they could say, hey, I want you to know I had an emergency. I can't pay rent. What can we do about it? And there's a big difference between that and then just saying to someone, hey, you have to leave because you didn't pay.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I know I've been there where I had to take my car to the mechanic and all of a sudden I have a $1,000 bill and it's a choice of I can't not get my car fixed because that's how I get to work every day. And then I won't have a paycheck. So I have to pay that bill. And now I don't have rent money. And we try to be really upfront with tenants. It's written into our leases. It's a discussion we have at lease signing to please let us know as soon as you know that you're going to have any struggles paying rent. If you're going to be short, if you can't make it at all, it is one of those situations, again, where we're in between the owners and the tenants because the owners have mortgages to pay. But we are working with owners that are willing to work with us on these types of situations where we can call them and say, hey, the tenant had a medical emergency, you know, can we work out a payment arrangement with them? Is that going to be okay with you? And majority of the time it is, whether that's a couple of payments or just a late payment without a late payment fee, things can be worked out. And I would much rather go that route than have someone be in fear that they're going to be evicted. They're scrambling. If you can't pay rent, how are you going to pay first, last, and deposit at a new place? And from the owner's perspective as well, it costs more to find a new tenant than to keep the tenant that you already have. So, you know, sure, if it's a continuous ongoing issue where one tenant is always late paying rent, that's a different scenario. But, you know, if it's once in a while or a short period of time that someone is struggling due to a loss of a job or an added expense. Yeah, absolutely. We want to know about it. We want to work with them and the owners to find something that keeps them housed and helps everyone in the long run.
Well, and before this, you did property management at another company. I won't name them. And I know that there were some things that were good about it, some things that were not, but it sounded like when you and I talked about this company, one of the biggest things or pieces missing was that we weren't treating people as people. We were potentially nickeling and diming. We were. So I guess how does the property management company that you work for and other property management companies compare to what we're trying to do with Peace by Lease? And how does that like sit with you emotionally?
Yeah, so the last company I worked for was actually a really great company. I mean, they are one of the better property management companies in the Portland Metro. They take care of their tenants. They're quick on maintenance. They're not raising rents to the maximum they can every year. They're trying to keep people housed as long as possible. They also, negotiate with people if they have a problem paying rent. There's all kinds of things that they're doing that's really great. But there are other things that I just didn't feel great about doing. And, you know, screening, like we were saying before, they have some higher screening requirements. And people would say to me like, oh, my credit score is not that high. And I would laugh and say, neither is mine. Like, I'm not qualified to rent from the company I work for. And, you know, I would have that like kind of nice moment with them where like, hey, man, we're in the same boat, but also I'm sorry, I can't rent this apartment to you. And it was it wasn't a good feeling. And that was, you know, part of why I left there and started my own company, because I wanted to make changes in that and do things differently. And on the owner's side, you know, there's a lot of different ways that property management companies make their money. And, you know, traditionally, there's a management fee where we take a percentage of the monthly rent, and that's what we do. It's a flat rate. A lot of companies take a what's called a leasing fee. So it's like a half of the first month for each new lease, and that covers our expenses for advertising and showing the property and doing screenings and all of that business, which is pretty time intensive. But there are articles, blog articles out there that's like 101 ways to or 101 fees to add to your property management company to like increase your profits. And those sorts of things just honestly make me sick to my stomach. I don't, you know, I have another business, professional organizing, and I charge flat rate. I don't nickel and dime people there. I don't charge the hours that I'm outside of people's houses. And I created that to be a really upfront, clear, easy to understand. And I wanted to do the same thing when we started Piece by Lease. So, you know, we're not charging, renewal fees on leases. It doesn't take us very long to renew a lease. It's like a couple of emails back and forth with the tenant, and we write an addendum. Well, a lot of companies are charging, you know, $100 or a couple hundred dollars to do that. The onboarding fees, like setting people up in the system, a lot of companies are charging hundreds, even up to $1,000 to do that. We're not charging those fees. So inspections, I think inspections are really important. Some tenants, that's, it kind of goes with the education aspect. Not all tenants know what kind of maintenance needs to be done on a property. So they're not always reporting things if it's not broken in their mind. So going in every 6 months or so and taking a look at a property and identifying maintenance that needs to be done to protect the owner's property, to reduce overall maintenance and repair costs, and to provide a good property for the tenant to live in. A lot of companies are charging for that. It's $75 or $100 per inspection. That's all included. So it's a really straightforward, we don't have multiple tiers where you get certain things and you don't get other things. It's just really clear, straightforward, and a price that is easy to understand without any surprises.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it keeps going back to, you know, treating people as people. And part of that starts with just being transparent with fees from the owner perspective as well. So you mentioned, or you alluded to your organizing company. I wanted to talk to you about that because you're not new to business. So tell us about Jane Does.
Yeah, so Jane Does, soon to be Jane Organizes, because we don't do everything that we used to do. We now do professional organizing and moving assistance, but founded about 5 years ago, and just really kind of the love of my life, of passion. I love going in and helping people streamline their spaces, and you know, a cluttered space makes for a cluttered mind. It makes for overwhelm. I'm sure everybody has like that spot in their house that they just avoid because it's a disaster. Sometimes it's a junk drawer, sometimes it's your office, sometimes it's your whole house.
You have your like elevator pitch about the fitting your cars in the garage.
I always say I fit cars in garages, and then people look at me confused and like, you know, if you have a two-car garage that no cars fit in, I'll come help you solve that problem. So we work one-on-one with clients, help them decide what to keep, what to get rid of. We're not the, you know, TV style organizer where we come in and we magically transform your space and we have a big team that rolls in and the next day it looks like you live at the Container Store. We're not those folks. It's a long process, but the results are, it's a system that you helped create. It's a system that fits your life. You made the decisions on what you're keeping and what you're getting rid of. We haul away everything you're getting rid of, so you don't have to deal with it yourself. Some organizers will like put it in the box in the trunk of your car, and then you'll call me in 6 months to clean it out of your garage when you took it out of the trunk of your car. So we just haul it away for you, do the donations and disposals.
How did you come to being an organizer? I mean,
oh man,
was this something you did for people, and then you're like, this could be business as well? Were you, you know, as a child, were you the one organizing the kitchen?
No, I was a hot mess as a child. My room was I was always getting yelled at because my room was a disaster. In my mind, it was organized. Like my mom would say, I bet you can't find the shirt you wore 3 days ago. And I'm like, no, it's like three layers down in the pile on my floor. But no, I have had several careers. For the age I am, it can be kind of surprising. I started out as a kid with a paper route and had to be organized with that because back in those days, we collected the money directly from each individual customer. So I was, 12, 13 years old, had to keep a notebook of who owed what. And I had to pay the newspaper office for the papers, and then I kept my portion. And so I had to be organized in that manner. I did that for, 10, 12 years. I don't know, a long time. Worked in restaurants for almost 20 years now, everything from being a delivery driver, hostess, all the way to general manager. And I also worked concurrently in financial advising offices. So I worked on paper filing systems, digitizing filing systems, creating onboarding systems to make sure that we were getting all of the pertinent information from a new client when they came in, and making sure that transfers were happening in proper order. So all of these things are organizing in some manner. So when I left the restaurant industry, also at some point in there, I got a business management degree. It's actually a small business administration with a focus on management and leadership, which is how I ended up in management and restaurants. But at some point I was sitting in an office job and kind of didn't know what the next thing was. I had basically automated the office. I was bored. I wasn't loving life at the moment. And I did an inventory of all of my careers and all of the things I've done in life. And was there any one theme throughout all of them that I found exciting or intriguing? And it ultimately was organizing. So it was like every time I was in a financial office and I redid their paper filing system or digitized something or created a system for onboarding, and the people around me were so excited and so relieved, like this made their lives so much better. Every restaurant I was in where I organized the storage area and created a system for inventory, and they were no longer wasting money buying things that they already had but couldn't find. And they were so excited and so happy, and it gave me joy to help them with these things. So once I kind of did that inventory, I Googled professional organizing to see if you had to have like a degree or certificate to call yourself one, and you don't. So I created a website and, did the really awful and amazing thing of creating a Groupon to get started. And I worked for like less than minimum wage for a short time, but it got people to see my business and got moving from there. And 5 years later, it's successful. We're about to open a second branch in Colorado. So.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Congrats.
Thank you.
Can you tell us about, without saying specific client names, like some of the projects you've done so that we can kind of get an idea of what those look like?
For organizing, you mean?
For organizing, yeah.
Yeah. I have worked with one particular family. I initially did, I think it was like 4-ish years worth of paper filing. And it was like all of the mail essentially that had come into their house in the last several years. And not only their mail, but they were caring for ailing family members. So I helped sort through all of that, helped them to figure out what mail was important to keep, what mail they could get rid of, how long they needed to keep things like tax documents, medical records, those sorts of things, created an entire filing system for that. And then I've actually gone back on about a monthly basis and helped them to maintain that system ever since then. And throughout that, we've organized kind of other parts of their house, but mainly it was that filing system. And, they'll text me occasionally and say, hey, do you remember where this is? And I'm like, it's either in this file or this file, because those are the two places my brain goes to when I think about that particular thing. So that's one. I garages are really truly probably one of the biggest things, because, you know, we are a consumer society, and we're encouraged to just buy things, and if you don't have space for it, put it in your garage, and if your garage gets full, get a storage unit. And people don't park their cars inside. So I actually had a client that after working with them for several weeks, they were able to park their car inside for the first time in a while. And they told me a few weeks later, their neighbor came over, they saw him outside getting their mail or something, and said, "Oh my gosh, I thought you were gone. Like, what do you mean?" And they're like, "We thought you went on vacation or something. We haven't seen your car in weeks." And they're like, "No, we just get to park in our garage finally." So that same client had a storage unit. They'd had a couple of, like, their mom and their mother-in-law had passed away in quick succession, and they had inherited all of these treasures from both of those families. And so they had put them all in a storage unit. And several years later, we went and set up a card table and went through box by box and kind of relived their memories in that sense. And we downsized their storage unit by more than half, and were able to find some great homes for some of the items they had, and then ultimately moving those things into their house and getting rid of the storage unit entirely. So,
yeah. Have you ever, seen things that were surprising? So, like, you go into a storage unit and there's like taxidermy or something like that.
Like, I have seen all the things. I have seen things that people wish I hadn't seen, and they're got like, "Oh gosh, I forgot that was there. Hold on, let me tuck that away." I have seen all sorts of like magazine collections. I have seen, probably some taxidermy at some point. Generally speaking, we don't work with hoarders because there's a mental health aspect to that that we are not qualified for. But kind of on the edge of hoarding in some situations, and definitely, made referral partners in the industry and in the mental health industry that we can help refer folks that need that kind of support too, because we, like I said, don't provide that. But I've seen some of those situations too. And those come in all shapes and forms. Some of those clients come to you as an ultimatum from a family member. Some of those clients come really tired of the life that they're living. And it's a lot like an addiction. Like, you have to recognize that you have a problem before you can fix it. And so occasionally those folks are ready and they've hit their rock bottom and they're ready to go. But we're not qualified for that level of organizing. So we help them find the right place. Mm-hmm.
And how does someone start the process with you? So if I were to call you and, make an appointment and we would start that process, is it you kind of survey what's out there? Is it that you ask certain questions? Like, kind of walk me through just the opening of the organizing process.
Yeah. So we do a free consultation. During that, we kind of gauge where you're at on your part of the process. How ready are you to get rid of things? Do you need to get rid of things, or do they just need to be organized in a better fashion for you? Kind of get a idea of what's going on there. And then when we start the organizing process, we actually work in 3-hour inclusive sessions. That's because I learned at 2.5-hour, everybody's eyes glaze over and they can't make decisions anymore. They're ready to just burn it down. So that gives us about a half hour to clean up. But we come in, there's a couple of mindsets. If you're doing like a whole house, there's a couple of mindsets of ways to start. One is the space that's causing you the most pain. And one is the space that can be completed in entirety the fastest. Because when you can see like, oh, this entire, if it's like a half bathroom, for instance, it's a small space, it doesn't have a lot of storage, you're like, wow, that was a huge difference. Now I feel great and I'm motivated to keep going. Or alternatively, it's that pain point where it's like, this has been a struggle for so long and now it's not, and that feels good. So that gets your momentum going. I'm a big advocate of just starting at the door, and that's like, in for me, everything in life, it's a metaphorical door sometimes. It's like, just walk in the door and start with the first thing you see and be like, do I need this? If so, does it belong in this space? What do I use it for? could it be replaced? And our process is really just to ask a lot of questions like that. Like, for instance, why do you have 18 pairs of leggings? How often do you do laundry? And if the answer is, you know, once a week, then I would suggest maybe like 9 pairs of leggings is sufficient because you have a couple for laundry and folding days. But just asking a lot of questions, you know, sometimes we'll get stuck on an item and you may have something that you haven't used in years, but you're convinced you're going to need. And so then the discussions go to like, okay, if you got rid of it today and then you needed it tomorrow, what would it cost to replace it? Could you borrow it from someone? There is a cost, even though it's not a dollar value, to hanging on to something. It takes up your physical space. It takes up space in your brain. So is that cost worth hanging on to it when you could potentially borrow it or buy another down the road if you needed?
Well, what about projects? Because it seems like everyone has like a craft or a project that they're going to work on, or they, I'm working on that. Oh, I'm doing that.
Again, it's questions like, when's the last time you worked on it? Why did you stop? Sometimes people will say, I don't actually enjoy doing it. I'm like, then why keep it? Like, I am all for cutting out the non-joyous things in life if we can. Like, some things, obviously, we got to pay bills. That's not joyous. But I'm a big advocate of like, if you're not enjoying it and it's not easy for you, like, there's not an ease to it and happiness from it, then don't hang on to it. If that doesn't solve the like, why do we have it? I set a timeline. So I would say like, okay, let's say 6 months from now, if you haven't worked on that project yet, it's got to go. And a lot of people are okay with that. In fact, sometimes we'll do that and then I'll come back for the next session and they're like, you know, I slept on it and decided I'm never going to finish that project. So you can take it with you today.
And then do you have the other? Does someone pick up something and complete it, or?
It does happen sometimes. And honestly, like, sometimes people stopped a project because that space was overwhelming. Maybe they were woodworking in the garage and then a bunch of junk got stuffed out in the garage. Like, the Christmas decorations didn't get put away properly. And now they don't want to go out there and look at it. And, you know, or they're fighting with a roommate or a spouse or somebody over the garage situation. So it's not a happy space. So yeah, there are definitely times where things get alleviated to the degree that someone has the space and capacity to complete something that is fun.
Yeah. So do you think that your organizing skills relate or kind of carry over to your life? And then also, do they relate or carry over to Piece by Lease, the other business?
Yeah. I mean, managing multiple properties for multiple people with all different kinds of tenants requires a level of organization that I don't think everyone has. So, managing my calendar when there's inspections to be done and keeping track of, you know, doing that 6 month inspections, what is the system? Again, I go back to systems. Systems are huge for me. So putting a system into place to remind us to do an inspection every 6 months so that we're staying on top of that. I think dealing with all different sorts of people in different sorts of places in life, in organizing, you know, like I said, sometimes people are coming to you because a family member just passed away and they're having to go through their items. Sometimes they're coming to you because they, you know, are about to have a baby or change jobs or move, or, you know, so everybody has a story and a situation going on in their lives. And it's very much the same in property management. You have tenants moving because they lost their last house, because they got a new job, because they lost a job, because their family is growing. And so you're dealing with people in all of these different places and need to be able to meet them where they are. So I've had years and years of experience doing that and asking questions to find out what works for people. And that, I think, applies across both businesses.
Well, and you're like me in that we have a lot going on and we try to multitask responsibly, would be the way to put it. What's your advice for someone listening that does a lot of different things? You know, how do they do them well, or how do they focus, or how do they calendar? Like, how are you best as a multitasker? That would be the way to phrase the question.
Sure. So I actually try not to multitask as much because I'm not as successful at it as I would like to think I am. So one of my favorite books is Getting Things Done by David Allen. And he talks a lot about multitasking and all the things that are in our brains. And when we have all these to-dos in our brains and things going on, and oh gosh, I still need to schedule that thing. And oh, I forgot to talk to this person, and I have a meeting coming up in a couple hours, and did I buy milk? And getting it out of our heads and down onto paper or an electronic format or something, it's kind of like a brain dump. It gets everything out of there. And then your brain can kind of calm down and quit worrying about all those bits and pieces and focus on something. So I recommend that. I recommend doing a brain dump, kind of prioritizing things. And then I like to time block my calendar. So, I am, working a part-time job while doing property management and running the organizing business and doing all the things. And so I look at my calendar and find blocks of time where I'm like, okay, I could spend 2 hours organizing my storage unit, which by the way is not my things, it's client things. I don't have my own storage unit. I hope to never have my own storage unit, but 2 hours organizing my storage unit. Or I know that I work best in the mornings. My brain is the freshest in the mornings. So if I have something that's like really data heavy or really complicated to do on a computer or a process like that, that's probably something I'll schedule myself in the morning to do. And then schedule something that's like kind of less brain sensitive in the evenings. So like I said, time blocking, this is my time to do this. When that 2 hours or whatever is over, take a break, move my body a little bit, and then move on to the next thing. So it's less multitasking per se. I'm multitasking throughout the course of a day, but it's one focus at a time.
And, I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, we were going to talk about your childhood. So here we are. What were you like as a child? Were you kind of similar to who you are now? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so born and raised in Oregon. I'm part of a mixed family. So I'm number, oh gosh, 5 of 8 or 7 of 10 kids, depending on who's counting, if we're counting steps and haves and adopteds and all of that. But there's a bunch of us kids, and we're split evenly, boys and girls. Didn't all grow up in the same house, but all of my older siblings, I pretty much moved home at some point. So the number of people in my house was changing somewhat regularly, and people were coming through and leaving. So a little bit of chaos to some extent, but it was a happy chaos. I always enjoyed my siblings being around and having their kids in the house. So I was babysitting my nieces and nephews when I was quite young, and sharing space with people can be hard. So I think a little bit of my organization comes from that, like knowing where my things are. I also was involved in everything. I'm a lifetime Girl Scout member. I was a Gold Award recipient. I started at 6 years old, sold Girl Scout cookies to earn my way to residence camps every summer. Kept my like cookie sales sheet from the prior years. So when I knocked on someone's door and they're like, oh gosh, what was that cookie last year I loved? And I'm like, hold on just a moment. I've got it right here on paper. So, in that sense, very organized, learned amazing skills through Girl Scouts and from my parents as well. I love camping. I love the outdoors. Hope someday to do the Pacific Crest Trail through hike when I am not working 6 jobs at a time and get to be off grid and phone off, have somebody else answering maintenance calls. But yeah, I was always involved in a lot of activities. I played little league softball and did swimming. And so very, very much kind of in the same realm where I was having to time block. It was like, this was swim practice, this was school. I need to have my Girl Scout meeting and then work on my projects, do my homework. And that I think kind of set me up for how I function in life now.
And what about your interests? I mean, were you interested at all about social justice causes or about advocacy or policies or anything like that? I know now, part of it is frustration, but rightfully placed. But were you, as a child, were you somewhat of the person who said, hey, we're not going to do it that way. We're going to do it this way, or that's not fair.
I definitely was. I mean, I grew up in rural Oregon where there's not a lot of diversity. And when diversity happened, there were definitely some unkind words being said. And first of all, I was confused. I was like, why are we calling them this particular name? Or, you know, why are people treating them like this? And my parents, you know, always explained it in kind of a matter of fact, like, this is a word that people use for this particular color of skin or sexual orientation or whatever. It's not a nice thing to say. And then I would go back to school and be like, hey, dude, don't say that. Like, I'm going to stand up for these people. And, you know, that's not fair. And Girl Scouts, you know, you're a sister to every Girl Scout, whether they look like you or they don't. I went to the national convention. There were over 6,000 Girl Scouts there. It was in Kansas City, Missouri. I was 16 or 17. So it was just amazing to see all of these people that are involved in the same organization and have kind of similar values based on that. Meeting up and coming together and planning for the future of Girl Scouts. And, you know, I think I learned a lot through that and was exposed to a lot more than I would have been just in the small community that I grew up in.
Very cool. Well, I have the questions that I ask every guest. So
okay.
I'm gonna ask you those. So the first one is, what's a quote or a mantra that you live by?
Oh my gosh. Oh, that's a tough one. I think there's a couple. I mean, I have enough is tattooed on my wrist, and it stands for I am enough as I am. I don't need to change who I am or how I am necessarily for anyone. Just show up as I am, and that in itself is enough. I think also, this is one, you know, my assistant, Martha, for organizing business, she frequently will say, like, that sounds like a you problem, not a me problem. And I love that as well.
Yeah, that's a good one. The next one is, what's your favorite childhood memory?
Oh, gosh, I think camping with my Nana and Papa, my mom's parents, at a place called Lit Creek, and they had their camp trailer. And I don't know if we had a camp trailer or a tent at the time, but I remember going, like, either walking or riding my little bicycle over to their camp trailer in the morning, and my Nana would be cooking, like, blueberry muffins in the oven, and just, like, the smell of it, and going fishing while we were there with my grandparents. I think that's probably...
Yeah. Now I'm going to think about blueberry muffins for the rest of the night.
Yeah.
What's a failure or mistake you made that actually turned out for the best?
Oh, gosh. There's so many. I don't know that I could point out a specific one, but I know that when I have felt like, especially my organizing business, that I have failed to serve a client well, I usually find that they were maybe not the best fit for my business and my processes. So every time that happens, I'm better able to pinpoint the correct clientele and ways to identify them during the consultation process, or, you know, to better communicate with people. You know, for instance, I did have somebody that wanted me to do the, like, TV version of turn this into the Container Store in their pantry. I showed up and they were like, okay, bye, we're leaving. And I'm like, whoa, that's not my process. And through that, I realized that I hadn't communicated that really well to them. And I went ahead and did it. When they came home, they're like, oh, this is fantastic. Do you think we'll be able to maintain it? And I straight out said no, because I created it in the way that I would want my pantry. I don't know how you want your pantry, because you weren't here.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel like I failed them because I created a system that's not sustainable for them. But we all probably learned something in that process. I learned to be really clear that I work one-on-one with people. I don't do it for you. And better when somebody says, well, you know, can you just come in and do this? I say, I'm not the right organizer, and I recommend them to someone else.
Yeah, that's a great example. What issue or issues keep you up at night?
Man, I think right now, COVID is a huge thing. And, you know, I am a big believer in science, and I'm also a big believer in everyone's right to bodily autonomy and their right to choose. But at the same time, I believe that, yes, you have that right, but you're exercising that right doesn't get to infringe on other people's rights. So if you're choosing not to be vaccinated and it's not for a medical reason or a religious reason, it's just because you're not comfortable with the concept of the vaccine or what's in it or whatever your reasoning is, I don't believe that you should then be going out without a mask on and not taking precautions, not social distancing, and making other people sick. And we've been in this for so long that it's exhausting. And I'm like burned out on it. And I want life so bad to get somewhat back to normal. My father, who is fragile, he's older, he just had a serious medical issue, now has COVID, and you know, I'm fearful. And I believe that he got COVID because people were untruthful. They were coming to the facility he was in and saying, yes, we've been vaccinated, or yes, we've been tested, when they hadn't been. And I don't think that's reasonable. And it's such a big, like I said, I'm big for bodily autonomy and your right to choose, but I don't think that should infringe on other people. And that's a lot of what's happening right now. So it's a tough one right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big one. If the other issues that we had in life were big enough. And then there's a fun one, is who is your favorite pop star or band?
Oh my gosh. Favorite pop star or band? It changes kind of all the time. I go through all kinds of phases, but I think consistently, and I don't know if he qualifies as a pop star anymore, but Johnny Cash, and Chris Stapleton. Chris Stapleton is just like the most amazing singer, and like so soulful, and it has such a great mix. And he has like an insane amount of anxiety and like stage fright too. So if you like learn his story, and his wife is at pretty much all of his performances. Sometimes she performs with him, but he's always looking at her in the crowd because he's like terrified to be on stage. But he's so amazing. So,
yeah, he's very talented. There's a guilty pleasure of Kelly Clarkson Christmas CDs.
Oh, and, yeah.
Chris Stapleton had a song on the Kelly Clarkson yes. album that just came out during this past holiday season.
Okay.
And it was really good.
Yeah.
Okay. So the last part of this is give a shout out to someone in your community who you think is doing a good job, and then let everybody know how they can find you for either your organizing company or Peace by Lease or both.
There are so many people. There are so many like realtors out there fighting the good fight right now with the market, what it is. And, I may have to get back to you on a specific shout out for that.
That's okay.
The list is long. Go to my Instagram, follow all the people I'm following, because I'm amazed by pretty much all of them.
Yeah. And then how do people find you for, you know, either business?
Yeah. So Peace by Lease is peacebylease.com. My email is support@peacebylease.com. We are Peace by Lease on Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn as well. So those are all of the places to find us for that. Jane organizes. It's janedoes.us, JANEDOES.US. Jane@janedoes.us is my personal email for that. And we're Jane Does PDX on most social profiles. Yeah.
Well, thank you for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I know that we actually have a business meeting after this.
We do. Like, we see each other, but we're not always having fun.
yeah, absolutely. Well, I appreciate it. It was wonderful to learn more about you and to talk about both of the businesses.
Yeah, thank you.
A very big thank you to Carrie for being on this episode of the podcast. And a reminder, please visit peacebylease.com. Be sure not to miss any of our upcoming guests by subscribing to the podcast on your favorite streaming service. You can also visit alofyourbusinesspodcast.com for previous episodes, custom gear, and if you happen to know anybody that you think would be a great fit for the podcast, click our contact page and let us know.